COVID-19 and whatnot. It's funny to think about how you phrase that. I know that there's a lot going on in the world with respect to that, but it seems like the trends are generally positive here in that there's the vaccines are widely available, and that's actually kind of a blessing for us where we are right here. We have enough room in here. We have a small enough group that we can all spread way out from each other for things like that so that everybody can maintain some of a more normal things, and we see people getting vaccinated and the masks are coming off and things like that. It's nice to be seeing things returning to normal. So it's good to hear that today. I have a message today. Lyle asked me to bring a message in his absence. And today the message is topical. And usually when I have, I don't mean topical as opposed to injected. I mean topical as opposed to expository from a passage. Sorry, we're on the topic of COVID. I had to make a little joke about that. But a topical message. And this message is, I don't really have a title for it, but it has to do with two sermons. Let me explain. I would say every Sunday when Christians gather together, there are two sermons preached in every church building around the world, wherever they're gathering. And you might be saying, what do you mean by that? Am I saying that every single church has two different messages, a morning and an evening assembly? We don't have that here right now. So that's probably not what I mean. Is this some kind of a trick question? In what sense do I say that there are two sermons preached every Sunday morning? I'll give you a clue. Number one of those sermons is obvious, and the other one is not so obvious. Okay, so I'm not talking about a Sunday evening sermon. How about clue number two? One of the sermons is mostly audible. The other is mostly silent. So am I talking about adding closed captioning to the messages in the morning and putting the words across the bottom? No. How about an interpreter for the hearing impaired? Nope, not talking about that either. How about this? The sermons occur mostly at the same time, although the less obvious one continues well after the audible message is over. I think you're getting an idea of what I'm referring to here. The less obvious sermon is the one that you are preaching right now as the audience to the verbal sermon or lesson wherever you happen to be. If you think about it, this actually applies to school as well or any other situation where there is a presenter and an audience with information conveying. I don't know about, I'm not going to get into the theater, whether this is true if you're watching a movie or a play or something like that. I suppose that kind of is, any kind of thing where you have one group presenting and one group listening. There's actually a second sermon going on. And more than that, my sermon will be over in a short while, not too much longer. But generally, the second sermon continues after that. And I would argue the second sermon often is the one that is more impactful. And this is a lot to contemplate. This idea of a topic came from a lesson or sermon that I remember hearing here. Actually, it wasn't a sermon. It was a lesson in one of the Bible study hours. Man, 25 years. I don't even remember which preacher it was. And it was a side comment made, and it was just a brief aside in the middle of a lesson on something else. I don't really remember which preacher it was. I want to say it was one of the mission speakers that we had who was coming through and made this comment. And I had to wrestle with it. I was kind of skeptical about it at first, and I had to think about it for a minute, but I think I've come to the conclusion it generally is true out in the world. If you doubt me, let me give you a real-world example of this. Anybody familiar with Yelp or Google reviews? Yeah, everybody sees them. In fact, isn't that become the most common practice for people? I want Italian food, Chinese food, American, you know, whatever your cuisine preference is. A lot of times the first suggestion you'll hear, let's hear with a group, with some friends. A lot of times the first suggestion is, especially if you're in a place where you don't live or you're not familiar, oh, let's go look on Yelp. Let's go look on somewhere online and find out where the closest and highest rated entity is. So let me take that one step further. How many restaurants will you visit that a friend of yours who you know gave a 1 or 2 star review to that restaurant? let's say out of five. You generally, those reviews are out of 5 stars or out of 10. Most of them are out of 5. If someone said, that's about 2 stars, are you going there? No, no. In fact, just that brief negative feedback, and they may not know nothing about the food, what it looks like, where it is, how cheap it is, how much you get for how much you pay. All these are factors that are kind of important in deciding what to get for food. But all they need to say is, that place, it's only got 2 stars. It's not very good. That's enough to keep most people from ever setting foot in a restaurant, is it not? What about 3 or 4 stars? If you're going to go by a Yelp review, are you looking for a 3-star place? Or are you generally looking for, what's the highest rated place? Is it not? So my point is, the rating of the thing, and this is a restaurant you've never seen potentially, you've never heard of, you don't know where it is, no idea. And yet the thing that is most important to a lot of people in how you decide to go there is, what is that rating of the thing? Again, think about it in a context of a sermon. The rating of a preacher or the rating of a teacher or a lesson giver is often more important than what, and again, that's all given without any idea what the content of that was. You've never tried food from the place, but people are looking at what that star review is. In fact, if I wanted to go to another direction of my message, there's actually a pretty big danger to living lives with that kind of a method. So, I mean, I could preach a sermon on how we shouldn't really be like that, because goodness gracious, there's every restaurant makes bad food once in a while, even good ones. I mean, they have a bad meal or your wait person was 5 minutes late pulling the food up and it was kind of cold when they got to it and they just forgot. And maybe everything else would have been wonderful, but they just made a minor error that ruined really good food. I mean, there's a lot of things like that can happen. But there's, for one thing, when you think about the rating system, there's a lot of misinformed people out there who don't know how to rate very well or who are just kind of idiots. No offense, but I mean, there are people that don't know how to judge very well. And the other thing is, when you look at some of those rating systems online, a lot of those Yelp reviews, I've come to understand, are kind of fake, or they have power to pay to remove bad ratings and improve the ratings that they have. And then just plain variance. People's opinions vary on a topic like what's good for food. Some people hate Chinese food. Some people hate Italian food. And they're always going to rate it bad, even if it's a good restaurant in that genre. So this is a real effect that people have to combat in preaching and teaching and anything in life that we do. And so I think that we should consider what is... let's get back to the idea of what's responsibility of the audience. I think it's pretty obvious that negative things that are said about a sermon can impact the view of the congregation and others. But what about right now? In the moment, you're not off talking to your friend about how good the sermon was right now. You might later, but at this moment, you're not. Is there anything that's going on right now that could make a difference to the efficacy of the message? What about this? If there was a little tiny noise like that going on, might it distract you? Just a little. I don't know if you can hear this from the back. It's not a big deal. We're adults. Most of us have learned, that's irrelevant. It's not a big deal. But if all of a sudden you heard a car alarm go off, it would distract you. Or if you saw smoke curling in through the door, that might be a different thing. But there are things that can take place during the sermon itself that can actually sway the other observers. What about just the general personal behavior of a person sitting in an audience? Body language. Do we seem interested in the message? Are we distracted by other things? Are people getting out, getting up, and walking around all the time and not paying attention to what's going on for one? Are people using the restrooms every 5 minutes? Look, and I'm not going to tease about going to the restroom. Erlene and anybody else who's ever cleaned in here would be able to tell you that, yeah, if you need to use the restroom, it would be preferred to use the restroom rather than staying in your seat and waiting until nature took its course. That's not what I'm saying. But my point is, the little things that we do to prepare for a message or whatever, they have a big impact, because somebody else doesn't really know what you think. In fact, somebody that has never heard you state or say anything about the sermon might go, well, Tony's always checking his watch every time Lyle preaches. What's up with that? I check his watch every 5 minutes. Or, why, he just is always, you know, fiddling on the phone, or he never opens his Bible, or whatever you might think. There's little things that we think about what we think, and we don't even know, and people are making a guess or an evaluation on the value of the person speaking just because of that. Really, what I'm getting at is that preaching is a shared responsibility. It is. I think a lot is, really, the preacher has the responsibility, and it's substantial, to come up with content that is relevant and important and valuable to us to listen. But after that, after it is delivered, it is the audience's responsibility what to do with it. There's lots of sermons been preached about what the preacher's job is, but not too many about the audience's job. So the question is, does the Bible say anything about what the audience's responsibility might be? So let's look at a few passages here. How about Mark chapter 4 and 23 and 24? This is coming from, I have a few passages and then I'll draw a brief conclusion from each one. And we'll see what the scriptures have to say. Mark 4, 23 and 24. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. And he was saying to them, take care what you listen to. By your standard of measure, it will be measured to you, and more will be given to you besides. This is Jesus speaking. And from this, I pay particular attention to the phrase that says, take care what you listen to. So one principle I would say for the audience is, choose wisely what you're paying attention to. Does this apply to a sermon? Yeah, I think it does. Not necessarily week to week, but there's a lot of people that don't pay attention to this. They're like, oh, this guy is famous. He's a good speaker. Everybody knows this person, whether it's somebody on TV even. Oh, this person's been speaking to crowds of 10,000 people or 50,000 people. But what's in that message? How carefully did we take care of who we were listening to or what we wanted to pay attention to? How about another one related to this? Acts chapter 2, just two excerpts from the first sermon ever delivered from Peter on the day of Pentecost. A very familiar passage to most of us. Just two points here in the middle of the sermon. Acts 2 verse 14. Peter, taking his stand with 11, raised his voice and declared to them, men of Judea and all you who live in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and give heed to my words. And then down again in verse 22, just briefly, Peter says, men of Israel, listen to these words. So we talked about choosing who you pay attention to, but then after that, this is something different. This is listening carefully to what you have chosen to attend to. If you pay attention closely to what Peter is saying here, the word give heed to or listen to, as translated, means a lot more than just hearing the sound of the voice. It's referring to the content of the voice, the content of the message. In other words, reflect on, pay attention to what the person is saying. Contemplate it and put it into practice. I believe obedience is actually involved in this type of listening, because of the importance of what Peter is delivering here. It is not important for you to listen to every silly, random thing that is out there in the world and pay attention to it, you know? If you did, you'd be in every store every day because they all put out ads and say you have to get here now in order to meet this deal because it's only this week. If we did that, we'd be in a store every second because there'd always be a sale you'd have to go to. We can't pay attention to all those. But if we do decide one, we have to go and go in the time frame it states in order to receive that. Same thing is true with a message. We choose who we listen to, and then when they're delivering, we have to pay attention during that time. How about this one? 1 John chapter 4, and beginning in verse 3, deals with the topic, I think. Here's what John has to say to us. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, of whom you have heard that it was coming, and now is already in the world. You are from God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak as from the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God. He who knows God listens to us. He who is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. And this is a slightly different point that I want to make from this than the others. But we talked about choosing who to pay attention to, listening carefully. But John seems to be discussing a situation where there are multiple voices. And sometimes we cannot unchoose the voice that is telling us something we shouldn't need to hear. In those cases, when we're hearing mixed messages, we have to choose which one to pay attention to by distinguishing what is true from other voices. It is not possible for you to select only information that is relevant and healthy and helpful for you in life. It's simply not possible, because you will hear some that is not helpful. So we do have to know what to do with that. And that's what John is talking about here. Two different spirits, attitudes in what is being taught in John's time. He's dealing with that. One is teaching according to Christ and one teaching different. In fact, he said they are from the world. The world listens to them. The world chooses to pay attention to the other message. But he says we are from God and he who knows God listens to us. He's saying you're aware of this message. You're aware of our message. You have to choose to listen to us because we're teaching the truth from God. That's what he's telling them. You must distinguish between multiple voices. All right, Romans chapter 10, verses 14 through 17. Another slightly different principle here. Romans 10, 17 being one of the more famous verses, and we'll get to that. But beginning in verse 14, how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? How then will they believe in him whom they have not heard? And how will they hear without a preacher? How will they preach unless they are sent? Just as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things. However, they did not all heed the good news, for Isaiah said, Lord, who has believed our report? So faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. Here, as Paul is dealing with the church in Rome here, you have multiple listeners. So yes, someone has to hear a message being preached, but you have more than one type of listener. You have some that listen and some that do not heed it. So I think listening needs to produce active faith, and active faith has to do with obedience. It doesn't have to do with a feeling towards the message. And I think that's brought out by what is quoted here from the Old Testament in this passage here, that some people didn't believe and didn't listen to the word, even though they heard the words. So my point is, it's more than just hearing the words. It's more than just preparing to listen to them. It has to do with obeying them. And my last point about what the audience should do is double check. We're going to get to that in a minute. And you say, now, wait a minute. Are you saying that you should double check what the preacher says? Isn't that his job? Isn't that what he goes to school for, goes to college for, to preach? How in the world can we double check, especially those who are not that familiar with what the scriptures are? And it can be hard for some people. Well, I say Acts chapter 17 and verse 11. This is a common passage cited for this type of a thing. This has to do with the people in Berea and their reaction to what was preached. And it says this, these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. And again, these people here are praised for not just taking it at his word, but checking it out. I'm telling you, it says this. Can you read it for yourself? Does it really say what I said or not? I'm capable of error. So is Lyle. Any one of us who preaches to you, we're capable of it. We're also capable of deception. I will not deceive you when I'm up here. Lyle will not, Mike will not, but that is our choice to not do that. But you don't know that for sure, because some people that will try and deceive you are lying about it. So you have to check what they say. That's my point. You don't necessarily know who's all telling you the truth in the world today. And you can't know, because we don't have supernatural ability to get inside people's brain. But what we can check is, let's see if what they said makes sense. Let's see if what they said matches what the scriptures say. And we can double check those things. I think God desires us to do so, because it validates our trust in the message that we're preaching week to week. It validates our acceptance of the material, because look, do you want something that a person says? How weighty is that? Well, I guess it depends on a person. You know, if a police officer said it, okay. If the president said it, you know, if somebody important said it, it might be a more validation. But if God said it, it's way more valid than anything anyone said. And so that's why I point out that it's important to figure out, did God really say this? Yeah, did God? Yes, Jeff? Okay.
You're on trial for murder.
Yeah.
The jurors, what's his name? Have already.
Chauvin?
Yeah, the Chauvin case. Have already said they had no choice. For fear of their community, for fear of themselves, they're under the influence. It's what we call a hung jury. That's what it should have been. And well.
I know what you're saying. That's it's a bigger issue, though. We don't.
You don't know what they're under pressure of.
True.
There's political pressure. There's all these pressures that impact the message being.
It's true, but I would say to that, God has never instructed there to be pressure put on people in that sense for the message. Never. There is nothing in the New Testament that tells us that we are to compel people to listen. People are free to not listen at all. And they did all the time. Your point is valid, but my point is God never, ever convinces people by coercion like that. He wants people to know what he says, but everyone's free to walk away and say, no, this isn't for me. I'm not interested. I don't believe this. That's your free right. That's everybody's right to not believe it. But my point is, what produces obedience and faith is something that double checks it, because the additional weight of being God's actual word is substantial to us in deciding, okay, this is really important because God said it and not because I said it or Lyle or any other preacher you've ever heard. And many people, to prop up their own agenda, want their program to be the one everyone is doing. What does that lift up? Does it lift up the message or the person delivering the message? I've got no interest in building an empire, and neither does anyone here, as far as a spiritual brand. I have no interest in writing 20 books and selling them to the world about how my system of faith will produce it. And I don't denigrate everyone who does that. Some people, I believe, do that for good motives. Others do it to make a lot of money. We're not interested in that, and God's not interested in that. My point is really the general principle. It's the audience's job to double-check. Lyle cannot double-check himself for you. I cannot. Neither can any other message out there. I mean, I guess if you ask us a question, hey, when you said this, that's different. That's double-checking that you heard what you heard. And you know, you could do a simple double-check that, did I actually read the right words? That's part of it. You know, I could have read the wrong verse. We've seen that. We've all heard a message where somebody, you know, said, here's the verse, and we're all there. We're like, that doesn't say what you said. And then it's like, oh, I said chapter 3, and I meant chapter 2, verse 5. That kind of thing happens. That's just normal human error. That's not an attempt to deceive. That's just an honest mistake. We've all done that or heard that in a message and kind of chuckle. And we go, or sometimes what it is when you hear it not matching, you're like, oh, I think I know where that is. And you're trying to figure out to yourself, can I get to where, I think I know where he's reading from, but it's not what he said, and let me see if I can find it, and then I can say it, you know, to help. But we're trying to help it be accurate, you know. We know that, and in those instances, we know that the person has the passage right, they just simply stated the directions of where to go wrong. That's a minor error we can correct, but I think I'm talking about more the content as well. That's a different kind of a double checking. The content is important to verify as well. And then the last part of verification, which is often left out of these discussions, not just accuracy, which is important, but also applicability. Let me give you an illustration. I'm just going to read this right out of the blue. 2 Timothy 4:13 says this, "When you come, bring the cloak which I left at Troas with Carpus and the books, especially the parchments." You read that, and what do you say? Oh, okay, I need to bring some books and parchments. Wait, no, we don't. Why do we not do that? Because we know right off the bat that Paul is talking to Timothy and telling Timothy to do these things, right? You see what I mean? But oftentimes people have this idea that every Bible verse is speaking directly to you. But when you see an example like this, well, it's obvious that Paul meant for Timothy to bring these things because he knew Timothy, and that was back then, and Paul's been dead for 2,000 years. it's really obvious that there is a context there that it depends on who the message was given to, but it's not so much with the rest of it. But we do need to consider that aspect of what we're reading, especially when you read things like the middle part, the middle several chapters of John, for example. The things that were discussed in the upper room with the 11, the 12 at first and then the 11 after Judas went out. Many of those things are not meant for us directly, but they're meant for us to understand the power and instructions that Jesus gave those men. They are not meant for us to do the same thing sometimes. Many passages of the Old Testament that deal with instructions for what the Israelites were to do have nothing to do with us. We are not creating a promised land and rousing and causing war and getting people out of the land. They were several thousand years ago once. That's it. When we read those passages, we need to understand what they were doing, but the applicability we need to understand was to them, not to us. We're not supposed to do those things. I say this because many don't understand this and they try and make everything applicable to today. A lot of it is not. It's just not. We need to understand what took place and why it did, but that is not for us. Some passages are like that. And so I think some preachers do a good job of accurately reporting, but they sometimes talk about a lot of things that don't apply anymore as if they did. And that's a dangerous thing. We have to be careful with that. Look, a full accounting of everything required of the audience. I can't give that in a morning message. Then you eventually would get to every single command of the New Testament. But my point is, there are things that we do and have responsibilities to do that we don't necessarily give attention to. Let me give you a couple of random other examples that are floating around in my head of where this kind of came from. When I was a younger person, there have been different preaching styles here over the years from different preachers we've had. And many of you have heard them. You can picture some of the styles of different ones you've heard. But there were a couple that I used to resent. There were a couple that would stop and point or say something to somebody that they were distracted by in the middle of the sermon. And I can remember being a young man and being annoyed by that. It used to drive me crazy because I thought it was kind of rude. But I thought, if you think about that more fully, I think what they're really trying to do, though, is protect the audience's attention on what they're presenting. And as a young person, I tended to view that as more of a personal affront. I'm not saying it was me they were talking to, but there were times where I can remember the preacher saying, "Hey, would you guys be quiet back there?" And I always took offense to that. Maybe it was, I think, honestly, more of the offense probably had to do with their manner. The rest of the time towards people wasn't always necessarily friendly, but what they're really trying to do is protect the message, right? Hey, I want to make sure everyone can hear this. And it's important to know what God has to say. And, you know, the other thing is that preacher has spent hours preparing, and they only have a window of time, maybe 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes, let's say, to actually present it. And they're just trying to say, hey, look, this is my time. I'm trying to tell everyone, don't be too noisy back there, whatever. And, you know, there was a point there that even though it might have annoyed you if you were the target of that, really what they're saying is, hey, can't we just pay attention during this time? It's only a brief time. You can go back to do whatever you want after this is over. But they're trying to protect this time. Other things, just general guidance that I think are helpful to think about this topic. I think it's our responsibility as an audience to the true word to act like that message is of supreme importance, especially during this time. We've all come here. If you don't think the message is important, don't even come here or anywhere you go. But once you've arrived, we need to act like this time is important to learn. You know, there's going to be a lot of sermons. I also remember when I was young, I used to have this idea of I've heard that before or I haven't heard that before. And at times it was like, I'd like to hear some things about stuff I haven't heard before. I feel like I've heard this message before or I remember this story. And you'd kind of be thinking, well, you know, maybe this isn't so much fun because I didn't know it. But then you think about, wait a minute, but not everyone's heard it. And part of our responsibility is helping everybody hear new things. And just there's a rejoicing that should take place when somebody else hears it. That if you're focused on, well, either I know it or I don't know it, and this is boring, like, okay, think about those of us who've worked for large corporations and some of the trainings they put you through, some of them you do like every year for like 20 years, and they're very similar, and yeah, they have that boring feel. But those things are not designed to change your entire life and get you to a better place off of this earth. Whereas the message is, there should be a rejoicing. You know, you don't sit there and go, oh, Bob, the new guy that was hired last week, I'm so excited that he's got the training now. He knows the do's and don'ts of social responsibility in a corporation. You don't have that same connection with your guy next to you. But for the word of God, you're like, oh, they're hearing this. Yes, I know this one. But I'm not angry that I'm hearing it again. I'm excited. It's like that song, you know, to tell the old story. It talked about the ones who know it best love to tell it again to the rest. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what the lyric. But there's a truth to that song. We can still be happy even if we already know it. So I think it's our responsibility to act like this is an important time to learn about God's word. I'm not saying we don't. This is not a rebuke or a criticism. It's just a thought of doing that helps us kind of remember, oh yeah, what are we doing here? Then there's a lot of little things that people want to know. What about electronic devices? There are those that use them during the sermon. There are those that don't. There are those that want to make a blanket thing. They're always wrong or they're always good. It's the 21st century. I don't think either is true. My question is this. Are you in control of that device you're using, or is it controlling you? I actually think there's some helpful to be able to have a Bible app right there that you can tap in a couple seconds. Because sometimes you do walk around and you're like, oh, I'm trying to think about it. Again, I don't use a smartphone very often at all, so I'm not one of those people. But there are those that do, and they'll pull the thing out, and they're like, what was that verse? And then they'll go and they'll find it in just a couple of seconds, and they may not have a physical Bible with them at that moment. For those kind of things, it can be helpful. Also, when someone is preaching, to have the passage open can be helpful too. But my thing is, I think the general principle is it controlling you, or are you controlling it during this time? I don't think that the phone or whatever the device is should be controlling anybody during the time of a sermon or message or whatever. The challenge is there are people that do that and then, oh, something pops up and then they get distracted. So the issue is this. This is what happens in practicality. What happens when you're distracted? You're distracted. You didn't hear the last couple sentences that someone said. And then you're like, okay. And then you're back up and you're like, okay. So you have a little decision in your mind to make. Do I try and figure out where he's at? Or do I just go, well, it's like 11:45, it's almost over. I'll just kind of like check out. But what I'm saying is you're making an evaluation in your mind when you're distracted. This happens, it's impossible to avoid distractions, but this happens in everything that we do or pay attention to. We're distracted and we have to decide what to do at that point. Do we re-engage or do we move to the side? And so that's partly why people should know themselves. If you're one of those people that's easily distracted and you're not going to go to it, you should make sure you don't get distracted because you already know, I'm not very good at that. I tend to disengage and then I get upset that I got lost because he made a point that I missed and I don't know where he's at. And so I think you just have to kind of know yourself, don't you? And people should do that. You know, this is, again, not a criticism, but a lot of times we don't even think about all this. We just do what we do and then it turns out there are people that, because of that, they're always distracted in the sermon and they're not paying that much attention. And it's just something that people should be aware of. The other thing I would think about is comparatively. What I mean by that is there are different things in life and we choose to pay a degree of attention to each of those. Food or sports or sermons or our kids or the events that we do. And my point is this. If you pay rapt attention to that Super Bowl like this for every second of the game, and your eyes are open and there ain't nothing that would tunnel vision distract you from that game. There's people like that. I'm not criticizing that. But then when the sermon comes up, you know, it was a sermon. You are saying something about what is important. And that's my point. You know, if there is a disparity like that in what you choose to pay attention to, that could be a problem. And so, you know, we ought to say, hey, this is important. It's important that the preaching and teaching goes on. I mean, for goodness sakes, what are we even here for if it's not? That's all I'm saying there. The other thing that occasionally would happen and always would make me wonder is immediately switching to other things. There have been a couple of people over the years that It always struck me that right after the sermon, they'd always immediately switch to something else. And it always made me wonder, hey, were they really, you know, usually the sermon leaves you with a thought or something. Yeah, I know that life intervenes. Maybe we have to go to the bathroom right after. I get all that. But there are times when someone was just immediately switching to, oh, you know, who are the Seahawks playing today? Or I got to go somewhere here. And I always wondered, hey, you know, I'm still thinking about the sermon. And it made me wonder how much that person was engaged. I don't know. I'm not judging them. But my point is, little things like that tell a message. Hey, you know, if you're still thinking about this, and maybe the person isn't, don't judge them, but just ask, hey, what did you think about the message? You know, try and shift it back over. You know, ask a question like that. It's like, we're only here one time a week. You got all week to think about all those other things. But it makes you wondering. And the last thing I'll just say is on this topic, the person delivering that sermon spent some time preparing. I'm presuming that, you know, Lyle, since he's been here, and he's been here, what, about 6 or 7 years now, something like that? He hasn't really taken a Sunday off, even though he's been offered so to do for a long time. I think Lyle really wants to be sharing with us. That is one thing that speaks to, you know, he hasn't really wanted. We've offered. He's like, no, I'm okay. I really don't want to miss Sundays. They've gone trips. They've gone over to Idaho, other places, but they typically don't miss. And I'm not picking on people who have family in other areas. I know that people do. But it tells you something about Lyle wanting to share with us every single week. He's not trying to indoctrinate us, but he enjoys, hey, this is my responsibility, and I want to share it with you guys. I don't know how much time Lyle spends on the average sermon. Is it an hour? Is it 50 hours? It probably varies, just like any other sermon. Some come pretty quick. Some take a while. But he is desiring to share that with this small group of us. And I think if, you know, it's going to be discouraging to you if you're like, man, I spent all this time and didn't even, like, pay attention to it. This is not, I'm not saying that's what we normally do. It's not. In fact, I think we do pay attention. But that's one of the reasons why, because we say, hey, I want to validate you spent time on this, and I'm interested to hear what he has to say. Sorry, there was one more thing I was going to mention. This hasn't really happened here, but it does happen in other churches. You've heard about this, Mike, I'm sure, in some of the other congregations. And we used to have this years ago when we had multiple preachers all at the same time. There was always a handful of people that always came when X was preaching, but never came when Y was preaching. You guys have heard that in others. Now, doesn't that just tell you something devastating about that person? They're basically saying, I don't like that other guy. Or I don't think that person teaches the truth. There is a message preached by that. I only come with, and I can remember a couple of people that said, oh, I only come on the evenings when so-and-so preached or whatever. I'm going back 30 years, a long time ago. There's nobody here right now that said that, so don't. There's nothing personal. But my point is, that kind of a statement says a huge thing about the importance of who's preaching and the value and the content of who's preaching. And it can destroy other congregations. There's been a lot of problems caused by this at other places where the other person who's just not as popular gets kind of discouraged and feels like, oh, people don't want to hear what I say. You know, and it's not, trust me, it's not, oftentimes that's not about content. A lot of times it's about a personal problem or about, you know, they don't like this person because they're very, you know, they get right down to the heart of things. And a lot of times when I've heard that kind of a talk, it's usually the person who preaches a very generic, simple sermon that they like, and the person who preaches a probing, difficult sermon is the one they don't like. So don't make this to mean that I'm saying that they like the better preacher. A lot of times they don't like the better preacher because the better preacher probably makes them feel a little bit uncomfortable. But that kind of a thing sends a message about the preacher. So in summary, my final comment today is just a church can support or kill the good messages of its preachers over time by a lot of the things that we discussed today. And they have nothing at all to do with the content of the message themselves. It's true. It's astounding and amazing if you think about it that we all have the power to say, this is important. This is a man you should come and listen to when he preaches. Or, nah, it's not. I think all too often we know that this is true, but we don't think about it. And so it's something to, I think ever since I remember hearing that message, I started thinking about that in a way that I hadn't really thought about. Hey, you know what, if I just get up and go get something or get up and go do something in the middle of a message, is that sending them? I've been kind of aware of that at times, just to make sure that we say how important it is that we listen to the messages that are given, and especially when they're important, because they're intended to help us and encourage us as we go from this place. Anyhow, that was what I wanted to share with you today. Again, it was a topical message, different passages there. I think there's a lot more that certainly one could get out of the scriptures as far as what the audience's responsibility is. You could go right through just the Gospels and look at what the audience said and did in response to the things Jesus spoke, for example, and get some interesting lessons there about what the audience's behavior was. But again, I wanted more to think about. In general, I think we forget how much power we have to prop up the speaker. And we don't think about that, and we think as if it's all based in the content of Lyle's message is either good or not. Well, it is important, the content of the message, but also our reflection of that. So I appreciate everyone this morning. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. I'm not going to do a song, and we'll just be dismissed after praying. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this time that you've given us, that you've allowed us to continue to meet here again. And we pray that the continuing abatement of the COVID-19 through society will be something that helps bring us back closer to the freedoms that we've enjoyed. I appreciate the setting that we have here where we can come and listen and hear the messages preached week to week. I pray that you would help us to bring only content that is from your word and true, and help us to understand what is preached and taught. Help us to lift up Lyle when he's preaching and give him encouragement and show our appreciation and understanding of the effort and time that it takes to prepare messages that are accurate, that it takes to explain things that are not clear from the immediate words of the text at times. And that takes a lot of time to dig into. So Lord, help us as we understand those things and appreciate them to put into practice these principles about our responsibility in listening, that we hold up show our hearty approval of all things taught and preached that are worthwhile here. We thank you for this time and ask that you help us as we go back out into the world for the week ahead, whatever it brings. In Jesus' name, amen.